Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pure Mind Matters, the show in which I discuss all matters of the mind. Welcome to part 38 of Control Your Brain, Control Your Life. I'm Udo Staatsbücher, and I'm live on air. You can call in at any time with questions and comments on the subject I'm talking about. If you have any questions, comments and suggestions not related to the subject matter, please go to my website mindmattersonline.info. mindmattersonline is one word. There you will find my email address and then write to me. I will reply within 48 hours. The same, of course, applies also if you cannot get through with your calls to this show. On my website, you will find also the last 20 or so recordings of my show, and a link that directs you to the Blog Talk Radio archive, in which you will find all my shows, old and new. Last week, I talked about communication and transformational words. In this show, I will conclude talking about both communication and transformational words. Remember, I ran out of time last week and I couldn't finish this theme. And then I will be talking about attitude and health and personality, and how this can affect you in your quest for health, getting well, or speeding up healing processes. I ended my talk of last week with the rhetorical question, what difference does it make to play stupid games with words? And I answered that it does not make any difference at all to the illness that had encroached on you. It would be indeed just a stupid game if you only change the words in the hope that this is some kind of magic formula. You say it, and then you will be well. Of course, this cannot be the case. You need to use the words in such a way that it breaks your own habitual pattern, and then everything can change. Because it breaks your unresourceful pattern, this will establish a new and resourceful pattern. It will make you smile. It will make you relax. It will produce feelings that are pleasurable and enjoyable, that will change your state of mind and allow you to intensify your quest to become healthy again. So, what you want to do is to say the words that are meant to transform your unresourceful thoughts to resourceful ones. To say them as if you really meant them. For example, if you used to say, this is too tough for me, I just cannot get through it. Say instead, this is terribly tough, but I will get through it. In this sentence, you have only changed two words, but they can make all the difference. If you say these words as if it was an affirmation, full of passion and with intent, you have broken your old pattern. Of course, you cannot stop at this one and only sentence. You say it and then you feel better for a few seconds. Then you focus on your old misery thinking and you are back where you were before. You need to continue using transformational words from now on and in perpetuity, as in forever. And you need to change all your communication method from negative to positive, exactly as I explained in all the previous shows. I had a client a few years ago who was referred to me by her physician. Let's call her Wendy, which of course is not her real name. Wendy has had a breast cancer operation behind her. Luckily for her, the tumor was a very small one that was removed very easily. It was just a lumpectomy. And thereafter she had the standard procedures and all was seemingly well. They had to go back to the clinic for checkups every 6 months for 5 years, as is usually the case. And that's where when these problems began. Actually, they had begun a few months after the operation, because after the initial elation that she was now free of cancer, she went through an emotional trough, feeling very vulnerable, very sad, and often deeply depressed. This state of mind is very common in people who had gone through a cancer treatment. I experienced this myself after I had the first cancer operation some 8 years ago. For me, it was not a surprise. I expected it to happen, and I could deal with it quite easily. Wendy, like most other cancer survivors, could not. In addition, she experienced something else that is not uncommon in this kind of cases. As her checkup time approached, she became more and more anxious. Her self-talk and how she visualized her immediate future was nothing short of a horror movie. She thought and told herself that the cancer had returned, that she would have to have a mastectomy, that her husband would turn his back on her and would leave her, that she would have to die. Every kind of terrible scenario was going to happen to her. Her physician prescribed medication for anxiety, which did not help a lot. Then she went to the checkup and she was fine. For a very short time, Wendy's state of mind was also fine. But it didn't last long, and the previous symptoms came back in full force, even worse than before. She had discovered a new scenario, which was that her husband would leave her because of her anxiety. This in addition to the other scenarios of mastectomy and dying. That's when her physician sent Wendy to see me. I'm not going to bore you with the details of my treatment plan, but one of the main things in it was to change Wendy's internal dialogue. It wasn't easy, because there was a secondary gain issue as well. Wendy indulged in these scenarios because it made her the center of attention for the first time in her life. However, it's quite a bit of work, but in the end we won, and Wendy went to her second checkup much calmer than before. Thereafter, I saw her a few times more. In fact, I saw her whenever she had not followed my instruction to do a certain set of daily mind exercises and then felt too weak to change her internal dialogues. But these visits have stopped now, and I know that she is fine. It could have been different. Wendy's stress caused by anxiety could have brought on cancer. Our immune system is constantly responding to the pictures, sounds, smells, feelings, tastes, and also to the internal dialogue that we hold in our minds, as well as the external dialogues that we hold with other people. Every thought that we think, every feeling that we have, in short, every internal or external representation is monitored, is overheard, and viewed. Whenever we have a memory of the past or we visualize our future, we evoke feelings in ourselves. If those memories or the visualizations make us feel disappointed or hurt or frustrated, angry, sad, guilty, fearful or angry, it will affect our mind. It will cause stress because these kinds of feelings are stressful. They will cause anxieties, and therefore they are detrimental to our health and well-being. Our immune system consists of spleen, thymus, lymph nodes, lymphatic vessels, tonsils, and adenoids, and is interlinked with all other symptoms of our bodies. It is linked to the neurological system, that is the brain, the spinal cord, and other nervous system organs. It is linked to the bone marrow, that manufactures all the cells that develop into NK cells, T cells, B cells, phagocytes, macrophages, and other cells that are part of our defense system to fight invaders. I have said so before, whatever happens to the mind, the body responds to it. Whatever happens to the physical body, the mind responds to it. Hippocrates, who lived from 460 BC to 354 BC, already said, and I quote, "For this is a great error of our day, that the physicians separate the soul from the body," unquote. Is it not quite amazing that now, some 1,600 years later, it is still happening? For us, the response must be really, to think positively and be optimistic about our health. Research has confirmed that people with cancer who are positive, who are getting mental support and use certain mind-body techniques or therapies, increase the NK cells activity. NK cells are the natural killer cells and generally boosted their immune system. Without a well-balanced immune system, people open themselves up to illness, and this could be also cancer. Research has also shown that one of the biggest causes of cancer is stress. Most certainly this was a contributing factor with me the first time as well as the second time. That's why I said that Wendy was fortunate to change her state of mind, or else cancer could have returned. Every year, scientists are discovering new insights into how the brain, body, and mind interrelate. How do they relate to each other in harmony? The human brain is one of the most intricate, mysterious, and powerful organs in the entire universe. We have been able to conjure up ideas and concepts, for example, in mathematics, that had never been considered, and we can imagine worlds that do not exist. So let us use the potential of our brain in ways that positively affect our health and well-being. To do this means to change the way you think. We cannot waste our time and energy worrying about needless things. Many of them will never happen. Many others have already happened and cannot be undone anyway. And many others are just petty, miscellaneous worries. So why worry at all? The things that already happened, you cannot change. And things that might happen in the future, and that's what most people worry about, are outside of your control or influence anyway. Those that you can influence, like work, business, studies, and so on, well, do your best to turn them favorable for you, and then you don't need to worry anymore. If you battle a severe illness, do everything you can, everything that is within your power to do, to get well. If you do that, there's nothing else you can do. So stop worrying, because to worry means to be stressed, and stress is not good for your health. Changing the way you think means also to change your attitude. Attitude is a reflection of the person inside. Sometimes it is hard to convince people that the world that they experience is a reflection of the attitude. They take the attitude that if only people were nice to them, then they would be nice in return. They are like the person sitting in front of a cold stove, waiting for the heat. Until they put a match to it, nothing will happen. There won't be any heat. Therefore, your attitude at the beginning of a difficult task will bring about its successful outcome. Your attitude towards others determines their attitudes towards you. Before you can achieve the kind of life you want, you must think, act, talk, and conduct yourself in all your affairs as would the person you wish to become. keep a mental picture of that person before you as often as you can during the day. The higher you go in any kind of organization of value, the better the attitudes you will find. A great attitude is not the result of success, but success is the result of a great attitude. The deepest craving of the human being is for recognition and for self-esteem, to be needed, to be recognized, to feel important and appreciated. But people have not learned to think. Most people never think at all during their entire life. They remember, but that is not thinking creatively or thinking in a new direction. They react to stimuli, but that again is not thinking. Remembering to set the alarm clock at night and getting up when it rings does not take thought. Nor does showering, shaving, eating breakfast and going to work, and at quitting time they go home and repeat the process. We live up to our expectations, whatever they are. Our attitude toward life determines life's attitude toward us. Let me return to the cancer theme for a moment, because this is relevant, of course. Cancer is not new. There have been descriptions of it in scrolls 2,500 years ago, and we find it mentioned throughout history until we arrive at the roller coaster of the 20th century medical politics, which swung between indifference, euphoria, and despair. Each wild lurch owing more to socio-economic fashion than to anything resembling solid science. Every era casts this disease in its own image. The Western world in the 70s was haunted by Cold War fears of the enemy within, and so the big bomb was replaced by the big C. HIV overshadowed the following decade, and then the search for cancer-causing viruses became oncology's new obsession. Now that we are obsessed with genetics, the focus of research has moved on to hereditary causes. When a disease insinuates itself so potently into the imagination of an era, it is often because it impinges on an anxiety latent within that imagination. We know now that cancer is not one disease, but many diseases. A silver bullet that could cure all forms of cancer is a fallacy, because every cancer is a different disease, demanding different treatment. We have to stop talking about cancer in singular and think about cancers, the plural. I have mentioned, for example, that stress can cause cancer because of the impact of stress on the immune system. Yes, it can cause cancer, but it cannot cause all form of cancer. Breast cancer, for example, is thought to have nothing to do with the immune system. I'm talking about positive attitudes and cancer. Can a positive attitude cure cancer? The short answer is no, it cannot. Many years ago, also I went through a phase when I thought that conventional medicine was for morons, and we, clever people, could do better by just using our mind power. I am very happy to admit that I have changed this way of thinking a long time ago. We need conventional medicine and our own mind power and our positive attitude and whatever else we can throw at this illness to delay its progress, to make it go away, or to speed up the recovery process. We need it all. We need everything. But what about, I almost can hear you say that, those people who did do it, who cured themselves with mind power, or with prayer, or with a particular diet, be it carrots, wheatgrass, or whatever, what about them? They have managed to cure themselves. Yes, I have heard a few stories, but even though I've never met somebody who had been successful, I only met people who know somebody, who was told that there was a cousin who met somebody. You get my drift. But I can believe that it has happened. We know there are spontaneous remissions in cancer in conventional treatment methods too. It's very well documented. Many cancers are chronic remitting relapsing diseases. That's their very nature. And we humans recognize patterns. This is actually the secret of our success, being humans. We recognize patterns. So we induce patterns. We have an unbelievably inductive imagination, and we say to ourselves, if the sun rose in the east for the last 365 days, it must rise in the east tomorrow too. So we typically indulge in inductive rather than deductive reasoning. It is very successful. But the problem with pattern recognition in this context is that it can become flawed. You might have a chronic remitting relapsing cancer and imagine it's remitting because you are drinking apple juice. But it may not be true. It could be a chronic remitting relapsing cancer, and that is its nature. However, having said that, it is important to have a positive outlook and to be optimistic. And it is even more important to maintain this optimism and positivity in illness. There are studies upon studies done by the likes of Harvard, Duke University, University of Chicago, and many, many others, showing a direct relationship between improved health, extended life, an overall sense of well-being, and having a positive, happy attitude towards life. Life is going to throw out some lemons, but turning those lemons into lemonade is one of the most important keys to maintaining good health. It is also important to find humor in even the most difficult situations. Humor stimulates laughter, and we know that physiological stimulation through laughter leads to a number of health benefits. As I had said numerous times before, laughter and humor reduce stress. They tend to boost immunoglobulin A, an antibody that fights respiratory diseases, and it tends to boost killer T cells, which are antibodies that fight infection. Today, almost everyone lives a very hectic life. Rush around in the morning, working long, stressful days, then coming home and trying to maintain the household. With all of this looming pressure, how can anyone focus on having a proactive, positive attitude versus a reactive, pending the situation attitude? Well, do the following. First, involve yourself actively in learning various treatment methodologies and their efficacy at fighting the particular form of cancer that has befallen you, or whatever life-threatening or severe illness you have. There's nothing more frightening than the unknown, so familiarize yourself with the processes involved. This will diminish some of the latent fear in fighting cancer, allowing you to face what comes with an open mind and a positive attitude. Second, change your state of mind when it comes to thinking about your condition. Although it might be difficult to step back and reassess your situation, view cancer as a challenge you are determined to conquer rather than as a hopeless situation. Likewise, even if you are confronted with an unfavorable prognosis or survival rate, remember that these are just opinions. People beat the odds every day when it comes to struggling against cancer. There's absolutely no reason why you cannot be one of them. A very dear friend of mine, a friend of many years, has cancer, and she was told she would last only something like 3 years. 8 years later, she's still alive. She eventually will die of cancer, but she has beaten the odds already by 5 years. Not bad. Well, third, squash negative thoughts the moment they arise. Immediately counter negative thinking with something positive. Remember, you are in control of your mind and you are the one who determines what you are thinking. So exercise this power to improve your attitude and avoid falling into a slew of spiraling negative thoughts. Some people turn to religion during the fight with cancer. So pursue religion or spirituality if it is something you believe in. It can lift your spirits or offer hope. In my mind, the danger there is to overly rely on religion and prayers and to leave it to what higher power you believe in to heal you. Fourth, practice de-stressing techniques like meditation while fighting cancer. According to information from the Mayo Clinic, regular meditation can help with a number of conditions, including cancer. Meditation can improve perspective and reduce negative emotions. Take time to meditate by yourself in a comfortable environment, closing your eyes and focus on something positive, perhaps your breath. Keep your breathing as slow and as steady as possible. But I have talked about meditation before, so I won't go into it again. And I now anticipate your following questions. If we use the great powers that we have, the power of our mind, our attitude, hope and optimism, do we have a greater chance to survive cancer? And my answer is absolutely yes, if we combine them with the wisdom of modern medical science. Will a positive attitude alone guarantee a long life? Absolutely not. Sometimes we may have to accept that there are events that are way out of our control. If a positive attitude cannot guarantee your cure or survival, what's the point then to have one? You have no guarantee, but you have a good chance that by adopting the positive attitude, you will be successful. It gives you hope, a good measurement of contentment, and increases your well-being, which is good for your health. Questions that I have been asked a few times. What about personality and cancer? Are certain types of personality more prone to cancer than others? Also, does a history of adverse childhood experience or a particular way of coping with stress make a person more likely to get cancer and to die from it? Conversely, do other personality or coping patterns protect people from getting cancer or help them survive it? Well, there are many studies that contradict one another whether the type of personality plays a role in health. In my mind, we know that personality affects both lifestyle and habits, which may lower or raise your cancer risk. In other words, your personality determines your lifestyle and your habits, and this lifestyle and your habits may increase or decrease the possibility to get cancer. If you ignore warnings about smoking, for example, or continue to engage in other risky health behaviors, you increase your risk of cancer. Another high-risk trait is procrastination, seeing a doctor when you have a symptom like a persistent cough or bleeding. This is the so-called ostrich syndrome, which is trying to avoid a problem or deny that it may exist out of fear. One theory suggests that people with repressive personalities who look calm but hold in a cauldron of painful emotions are more prone to develop cancer. Dr. Lydia Temoshuk, a psychologist who led a number of research studies on personality on cancer at the University of California, San Francisco, labeled this type C personality, Z does not stand for cancer, by the way. Type A is a hostile, impatient personality, and the type B is a docile, passive personality. Type C individuals are in between, probably the majority of us. They have a dramatic physical response to stress, yet they say that they are not highly stressed at all. Although Temoshek and her colleagues found some difference in cancer risk and survival among type C patients with melanoma, the general consensus in the scientific community is that there is insufficient evidence to make the leap that if you are a type C, you are more prone to cancer or less likely to survive it than other people. Other theory suggests that people with a fighting spirit survived longer than those who were stoic and expectant and accepting of whatever happened to them. I totally agree with this theory, based on my own personal experience as well as on what I experienced with other people. However, rather than trying to pin cancer risk on certain personality types, research in recent years has explored the role of individuals' coping patterns. How people handle the daily hassles in their life correlates to how they deal with cancer and its outcome. Certainly, if your personality leads you to go to a doctor quickly with a symptom that might be cancer, you will receive an early diagnosis, which will more probably lead to cure. If you procrastinate, cancer may be diagnosed later at a less curable stage. Other personality traits, such as tenacity and persistence, play a role in determining whether you doggedly hang in to complete the treatment. There's also something that I want to call the healthy personality. Let me explain. But before I do that, I have to have a sip of water. Sorry about the interruption. Let me carry on. Healthy personality. As I said a few times before, our perception of the present is more important than past childhood events in attaining healthy personality. Personality must be understood through the individual's personal point of view, his or her own subjective experiences. What is real for individual is their unique perception of reality. I believe, and I have said so many times before, that reality is subject to each person's perceptual experiences. Therefore, it will differ from one individual to the next. However, there is a common and basic motivational force in most of us, our tendency or our striving to actualize. To actualize means to realize one's full potential. Actualization is also the curative force in psychotherapy. Man's tendency to actualize himself, to become the sum of his potentialities, and to express and activate all the capacities of the organism. I also believe that one single motivation is common to most of us, the fundamental need to maintain, actualize, and enhance all aspects of us as individuals. All aspects of human growth and development operate within this actualizing tendency, including physical maturation, such as the body's organs and physiological processes developing. The actualizing tendency at the physiological level is irresistible, as it thrusts the individual forward from one stage of maturation to the next, forcing one to adapt and grow. Our goal in life is not maintaining homeostasis, tension reduction, or ease and comfort, but movement. Movement toward increased complexity of functioning, which will allow us to become all that we are capable of becoming. Self-actualization is the process of becoming oneself, of developing one's unique psychological characteristics and potentialities. The process is lifelong and continual, and it is the most important goal in any person's life. We humans have an inherent urge to create, and that the most important creative product is our own self. Healthy personality is not a state of being, but a process, a direction, not a destination. Self-actualization can be a difficult and painful process involving continuous challenges to one's capabilities. It involves the courage to be. It means launching oneself fully into the stream of life. Another essential point within this model is that self-actualizing people are truly themselves without pretending to be something they are not. The self is a master of the personality and operates independently of the norms dictated by others. Once we are our own masters, so to speak, when we have achieved a healthy personality, we experience a number of benefits. Openness to experience is one of them, and it means that the absence of inhibiting conditions of worth allow us to experience all feelings and emotions, since none are seen as threatening or having to be defended against. Therefore, openness to experience is the opposite of defensiveness. The fully functioning person intensely experiences a wide range of positive and also negative emotions without closing off aspects of the personality. This results in greater personality flexibility. Another benefit is that we practice existential living. It means that we as fully functioning persons live fully in every moment of existence. Each experience is perceived as fresh and new, allowing for excitement as each experience begins. The self is open to new experience, resulting in adaptability to life. There is a school of thought, which is humanistic psychotherapy, that believes the person is actually saying, what I will be in the next moment and what I will do grows out of that moment and cannot be predicted in advance either by me or by others. This quality of existential living is the most essential component of the healthy personality. The personality is open to all that is happening at the moment, and it finds in each experience a structure that can easily change in response to the next moment's experience. Very important is also this benefit, trust in one's own organism. Behaving in a way that feels right is the most reliable guide to deciding on a course of action, and it is more reliable than rational or intellectual factors. When an activity feels as though it is valuable and worth doing, it is worth doing. Making decisions only based on rational or intellectual factors handicaps us, because emotional factors are not utilized. All facets of the person, conscious, unconscious, emotional, and intellectual, should be analyzed in decision making. Healthy persons trust the decisions as they trust themselves. Our healthy personality gives us also a sense of freedom. Psychologically healthy people experience freedom of choice and of action without inhibition or constraint. We choose freely between alternative course of thought and action. We fully functioning people feel a sense of personal power about life and believe that the future is dependent largely upon our own actions. This feeling of freedom and power creates many life options and the accompanying belief that we are capable of doing whatever we wish to do. The mastery of ourself enhances also our creativity. I believe that all fully functioning persons are highly creative and spontaneous. Creative individuals are not known for conformity or passive adjustment to social rules. Due to their lack of defensiveness, they are not concerned with approval from others for their behavior. The fully functioning person is thought to be more capable of adapting to and surviving drastic life changes due to the creative and spontaneous element. In the context of our health, or rather how we face up to the challenges that we have, it means that we are not content to sit back and let others make decisions over these challenges. We do accept advice and help, but we also use our creativity to think outside the box and to use all our abilities to deal with our challenges. In conclusion, I want to be me and to be now. This model is attractive to all of us, in particular now in an age which emphasizes self-expression and being free of inhibitions. Psychologically healthy persons are capable of self-directed growth and leading their lives largely unaffected by childhood events. There exists an inherited tendency for psychological growth and actualization, a built-in natural motivation for health of mind. The contributions of positive regard and conditions of worth are valuable, as are the characteristics of fully functioning people. Being fully open to all experience, without feeling threatened, offers potential for an exciting lifestyle. Responding to life experience as fresh and new and living fully in each moment of existence is very worthwhile. The ability to choose and to act freely without constraint, to feel a sense of power over life and to be creative and spontaneous appear as cornerstones of healthy functioning. This model that I laid out to you is, of course, not only important to adopt once we are ill. It is our life model. This is how we should be. It has made it possible for me to deal with my health challenge very well indeed. It is probably the reason why the cancer has only progressed very slowly. However, I will not feel guilty or betrayed by my own belief if, at some later stage, I require additional help from conventional medicine. I would not reduce my belief in this. It would not reduce my belief in this model either. It would be just a realization that I have no full control over my life, but can only influence it to some degree. If you consider it to be too painful, too difficult, too time-consuming to strive for this model of healthy personality, which actually leads towards life mastery, think again. Begin in a small way by changing your vocabulary, work on your self-confidence and your self-esteem, and use all the tools that I talked about, and you will begin to feel different after a relatively short time. You will definitely feel different enough to realize that you're on the right track. You also feel different enough to see your challenges, whether they are health challenges or other significant challenges. You will see them from another angle, not from the angle of the victim, patient, sufferer, being helpless and hopeless, but from an angle that gives you strength and hope. I have come to the end of this show. Thank you for listening. Please website mindmattersonline.info. There you will find my email address. Mind Matters Online is one word. Write to me with your comments and suggestions, and with any questions you might have. If you have any problems you want to discuss with me, let me know. You can be certain of my best possible advice. I always reply to emails within 48 hours. For now, I leave you with wise words by Richard Dawkins, and I quote, "There is something infantile in the presumption somebody else has a responsibility to give your life meaning and point. The truly adult view, by contrast, is that our life is as meaningful, as full, and as wonderful as we choose to make it, unquote. Next week, same day, same time. Goodbye.